Knock, knock, guess who is knocking at your door? That's right, you know it's the morning for sure. Might be a geography, could be, maybe it's mineral.
I only see Kurt's face as a picture, though.
That's a great way to start the show, Irene. Wow. Thank you. Thanks, Irene, for starting us off at This Week in Mormons, everybody.
Welcome.
She can only see Kurt's picture. That's what you should all know.
Can you still hear me?
Yeah, you sound great.
Oh, great. Thank you.
Your picture's pretty... that's pretty hot, Kurt. I'm not going to lie to you. I see that, and I'm
solid
like,
picture.
What is happening?
Can we just make that the new logo of TWIM?
Hey, Kurt's picture. I want rights.
I could actually do this very easily and change the embedded album artwork in the download so that on this episode, people just see this instead of our logo.
Sure you'd get more downloads.
I'm not. There are only so many ways to get to the number 17, Irene. I mean, it's...
I believe you.
I don't know. His picture looks... He kind of looks like a lawyer in the
picture.
All right.
This is a mob thing going on here. I demand order. Folks, as you know, I'm Jeff. I'm your MC here on This Week in Mormons once again. Our good friend Al, of course, once more says he is in Europe and he is busy. He is, quote, on a night train to Vienna. What is that, a euphemism? I don't know. But whatever he's doing, he's in Europe. Again,
I bet they got Wi-Fi on that train, Jeff.
They probably do, because on every train I've been in Europe, there's Wi-Fi. Why is he not just recording? Oh, he wants to go on a trip with his brother. You know, okay, that sounds exciting.
You guys are on the rocks.
I missed 1 week of TWIM in 6.5 years. 1 week, and that was when my son was born. Boom. That was it.
Well, Jeff, you've entered the married stage of your life where life is just boring. You don't get Europe trips.
There's some truth to that.
I will say travel has significantly decreased since having a child.
Yeah. Excitement for me now is like if I get to go to the movies. That's about it. But that's life.
I don't even get to do that.
So.
Excitement for me is to get to sit on the couch and watch TV.
Which is true, too.
Well,
anyway, folks, but by way of introductions, because you're hearing a bunch of random voices that are not Al, let's make sure we have everything straight. So, of course, I'm here. I am joined. I'm just going to look at my screen. Irene, what are you going by last name professionally, Irene? What are we doing here?
I go by Stone. That's my name.
Okay. Irene Stone is with us. You might know Irene if you go to our website at thisweekinmormons.com. She's written many an article for us, some of the best ones we have, actually. So if you want more articles from Irene, hashtag draft Irene. Let's make sure
what have you written, Irene? Give us some of the headlines. What have you written on TWIM?
My inaugural article was about the new garments. And
underwear.
Yeah. You know, it's a common topic in my... somehow in conversations that I have, so I had a lot of opinions about it. And then otherwise, mostly recently, I mean, I really honestly haven't written very many things recently because I have a lot of things happening. And so what did I write most recently? I don't even know, Jeff.
I don't know. You wrote Harvard Divinity School last August. I don't think that was it, though.
That was not it. Oh, I wrote something about, the refugees.
The most recent thing you wrote, yes, was because... Okay, because your father was a refugee from North Korea, right?
He is, yeah. He's not anymore. Sorry. He was, yeah.
I don't know which tense we use in that sense. He's still alive, but he's no longer a refugee.
Right, yeah. Yeah, so that was the last thing I wrote.
And that was in... Wow. Well, that was in March.
That was after the women's conference.
Women's conference. So not too shabby. Not too shabby. But anyway, Irene is with us this week, and we're grateful that you took the time to join us, Irene. So thank you. Everyone clap.
Thanks for having me.
And now we are also joined from the quote-unquote fine state of Idaho, Tiffany Hales, LLC, or what, Esquire? What do we call you? What's your title?
Just Tiffany Hales. I'm a lawyer, but I think the Esquire thing is
a little
pretentious.
Yeah, that's why you use it, because you go to the trouble of being a lawyer, you get a title. Come on.
So you mean when I got my master's and I made everyone call me Master Stone, that's pretentious?
I thought of changing my checks.
I'm pretentious enough already. I don't need the Esquire title.
I mean, if I were to have a PhD, you'd better believe I'd say doctor. And I would be the guy who'd walk around like on the plane when they say, is there a doctor in the plane? Someone's hurting. And I'd walk up there and be like, yeah, what's going on? I'd say, well, this man is in cardiac arrest. I'd be like, cool. Do you want to talk about international policy? Because I am a doctor of that. And then they would smack me and tell me to go away. And we'd all learn a lesson about the importance of MD versus doctor. Valuable lessons. But Tiffany's here joining us. We're going to talk about some women's issue stuff today. And that's why we've reached out to
Jeff. Because I got a lot to say.
Yeah, you didn't introduce Kurt, did you?
I'm getting there. No, I was saving Kurt for last.
Do I need an introduction, Jeff? I mean, I am epic when it comes to the Twim world, Twim Nation.
If the Twimites don't know Kurt Frankum by now, that's sad. But if you're new, Kurt Frankum runs a little show called Leading LDS, which has, I would say, really, you've picked up some serious steam in the past year or so, buddy.
Yeah,
I think
it's been going great.
Yeah.
So I'm looking for leaders. People want to talk about leadership or listen about leadership. I got a podcast that I run where interview some of the most prolific leaders across the world in the church and talk about how they lead, and then we just talk about anything that relates to callings and that takes some leading. So that's me.
No, Kurt does great stuff. Did you happen to do the interview yet with the new president of the new stake in the Czech Republic? I saw you were fishing for that.
Oh, man. I've got some leads. I haven't nailed it down yet, but I would love to do that. I may have to travel there, you know, expense the trip, but I do it for for the love of the game here.
Okay. Well, there we go. So, folks, that's our that's the panel for the week. That's what
we're
doing.
So, I need to know, Tiffany, like, who do you sue people? I mean, what kind of law do you do?
I am in a practice with two other attorneys, so there's three of us, and we just do a little bit of everything. One of my partners has an immigration practice, and so he does a lot of immigration law. Another one of my partners does real estate, and I primarily do a lot of family law, divorces, wills, estates, probates, and then a little bit of criminal
defense. So you are
all
about the death tax is what you're saying. You are a death taxer.
Oh yeah, pretty much.
Gotta love the death tax.
Oh my gosh. I'm a true blue Republican, people. It's the worst tax of all. How dare you?
My clients tend to come to see me when they are in a very highly emotional state, needless to say.
Okay.
So sometimes I feel like I'm one part lawyer and two parts psychological counselor.
Do you bill them hourly separately for those two things, or do you?
I don't. The state bar would frown on
that. Idaho
has
a state bar. I'm so
excited. Idaho has a state bar.
Are you a native of Idaho?
I am. I grew up here, went to high school here, did a little stint at BYU to get some education, came back here, and I was the city prosecutor in the city that I grew up in, which was just all sorts of fun. Prosecuted all sorts of friends and foe and family alike. And then I had a little stint in Utah, and now I'm back in Idaho.
What's the biggest thing you've prosecuted? Like, have you taken down Big Pharma or anything like that? Like,
No. I was the city prosecutor, and so I just did misdemeanors. So anything from your dog is barking to first offense, second offense, DUIs, domestic violence. So, you know, I didn't put people away for significant periods of time. In Idaho, first and second offenses are a misdemeanor, depending on, you know, if it's just like a push or a shove, if it's a strangulation or, you know, something a little more serious, then
No,
we do not condone that. Then it gets into the, felony arena.
Unless it's like a kick happens or somebody else. In that case,
that's probably where Al really is. He's outside McKay's house just waiting for a good shove.
Just standing there, just waiting in the darkness.
You've sent him on assignment.
Oh, come on. You don't think McKay doesn't have a house. Let's be honest, people. We know.
So, Tiffany, have you ever defended somebody who's violated the do not call registry?
She's a prosecutor.
I have.
Oh, sorry.
I, Yes, but I do some criminal defense now, and I have not defended anybody who has violated the
because
do
it can
not
get
call
expensive.
Registry.
We'll find out later.
That's so. What I hear.
Is that a segue, Kurt?
That's a
are you taking
good segue.
No, no. That's a foreshadow. That's what that is, Jeff.
Okay, fair enough. Now, Irene, I feel like we glossed over you though. What do you? What's your jam?
So what's my jam?
What do you? You know, what's your? We didn't talk about you being
what
a
do
teacher.
You do?
I don't think.
What
do you?
So.
What defines
as
you?
A profession, I am a first grade French immersion teacher. So I teach first grade in French.
Whoa.
And
in Utah.
In North Salt Lake, Utah. Yeah.
Are there a lot of like fur trappers coming through anytime soon? What is the
so
is there, there's
it's not
a demand
for people
for
who already speak French, it's for kids to learn French.
Yeah.
So
Okay.
So, yeah, I mean, there's just lots of dual immersion schools in Utah because there's so many people that speak foreign languages. And so there's lots of French schools and Spanish schools and Chinese schools. And so I just, yeah, that's what I do for work. I have a husband and a child. And I grew up, I don't know how far back are we going. I grew up outside of Buffalo, went to BYU.
Wow. Outside of Buffalo, like in Palmyra? You mean?
Closer to Buffalo than Palmyra.
Rochester?
It was called Williamsville.
Never
and,
heard of it.
Yeah. But like,
did you learn your French in Buffalo?
So, I started taking French when I was like 11 in school. Wow. And then when I was in college, I kept up, you know. Went on a study abroad to Senegal and learned a little bit more French there.
Cool.
I ended up going serving an LDS mission. To,
that'll do it.
To the south of France. And then I came back, finished school, and then I went back and lived in France for a couple of years, and then came back here, did a master's, and teaching French.
Yeah. Irene, did we touch missions?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. Yeah,
which one were you?
I was in Toulouse, so it went all the way from Bordeaux to Nice, basically.
If you were in Toulouse, we our missions touched. How exciting!
This is exciting.
This is the twin bond, everyone. You got Barcelona, you got Toulouse. Everybody is just coming together. Kurt, I forgot where you served your mission, but
Sacramento, man.
Is that where you went?
The Espanol.
I don't know. Went to Sac Town. Oh,
yeah, man.
Tiffany,
I'm going,
this is not
I'm going
to belittle
back in a month.
If you did not serve a mission, Tiffany, it's okay. We just want you to.
I did not serve a mission, and I am perfectly fine with that decision. I would not have been a good missionary, and so it's probably better that I didn't serve a mission. I probably wouldn't have followed the rules very well.
A rebel.
And so, yeah, you know.
I once had a companion who finally snapped after a rough morning and after a number of rejections, you know, and just yelled at the guy, "I hate you," afterwards. And I was like, all right, this is going to be a fun day. I think, and this was literally within 15 minutes of leaving the house for the morning. And it's just one of those days when we got slammed on the streets like 20 times in a row. No appointments or anything.
And was it just completely silent between you two for like an hour?
Yeah,
and then finally you said, you okay, man?
Yeah, because what do you say to that? You can't be a man and overmanage the situation. It's just going to stress everybody out. You just got to be like, okay, all right. We're just not going to talk for a little while. And I think I'm going to be doing contact by myself for the next few minutes. While he just
stands
there.
Being a missionary in Europe, right?
Yeah, well, it's
you snap a
yeah,
little,
but you never, you don't actually
often.
Know. And
yeah,
then
it's
you,
the only mission I know. So
it's true. All right.
I mean, I don't
so, Jeff, I feel like I have a duty to ask you. We've eaten up your banter time with our
care.
Banter.
Oh, yeah.
But we need to ask you, how was your week?
What'd you do?
Because
it doesn't
we care
matter
about
on this.
Your life.
I would just like the Twim Nation to know that there are two parents of Guy on this show right
that's
now.
That's true.
That's a strong name. Irene's son is Guy. My son is Guy. Everyone should get in line and stop making fun of my son's name.
Hey,
I'll come for you.
You know what else is funny? Isn't Guy, what's Guy's middle name? Your Guy's middle name.
Do you want a social, too, while we're at this? I mean, should we just go? No, what is his middle name? Because everyone thinks his middle name is Matthias. We
but
talked about
Mathis,
this last week.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
Which is your wife's maiden name, correct?
Yeah, oh,
I'm
we're getting
like
all the security
stalker,
questions right
I
now,
like,
Irene. We're
no.
doing a great job.
Sorry, am I not supposed to talk about this?
No, you're fine.
You can edit this
you
out,
can edit
right,
it out
Jeff?
In post. Yeah.
Sure, I can do it all in post.
I'm never going to be invited back.
What's the point you're getting
at? Okay, the point I'm getting at is my guy's middle name is Kim, which is my maiden name.
Look at this.
Whoa.
So there are even more connections.
Oh.
Is your last name Openshaw? This is getting weird.
But if you want to take it to another level, Irene's husband knows my wife.
That's true.
So, yeah.
And now I'm finally seeing you via Skype.
What are the chances?
This is the
crazy.
Anyway, I'm not going to ask you how your weeks were for the sake of time, but my week has been actually not great because my son has been sick all week, and we've been tending to that. So it's been very
fun. Oh, boy.
Sick babies are hard.
The nation will pray for him.
They should. He's going to be okay. He's going to be okay, but he's never been this sick before, and it's very sad. It's very sad. When you have a child who is sick, like, you feel helpless, and you feel terrible when you see your kids suffering and there's nothing you can do. If you want to talk about even slightly understanding, in a sense, what Father in Heaven goes through for us, or what Jesus went through for us, and seeing us err and have problems and suffer, I can't even imagine what that's like. Because I see my own son with a fever just sobbing on the floor and not knowing why he's in pain and doesn't understand any of it. And I feel awful about it. And all I just want to do is weep for him. And you take that up to more of a macro level, and I just... So in that sense, there's been a testimony-building experience sort of ancillary to all of this.
Nice.
That's my story.
Good spiritual thought, Jeff.
But I hope all of you are well. Have your weeks been wonderful? Have good things
People
happened?
Don't know us, Jeff. They don't care.
They might know you. Maybe you're all part of the new twin family. This is just a thing now.
Well, I apparently didn't pass the test.
That's right.
Giving away too many...
I am going to change my son's name to Guy tomorrow. So.
Irene, we're just going to give away your phone number, email address, and
you know what?
Address.
It's probably out there anyway, so.
It's probably true.
Go for
Kurt,
it.
What's your kid's name? You have two kids.
Yes, I have a Devery May.
That's not a name, but okay.
It is a name, and it's not a Utah name, so give me credit. And
it sounds like an
Idaho
name.
Sounds like a
Utah
name.
Right?
Well,
right,
my wife is from Blackfoot, so Idaho makes the best women. You with me, Tiffany, huh?
Okay, I am 100% with you on that.
50%, we're almost to a majority. So then my little boy is Taysom. Yeah, I know he's the quarterback for BYU, and I'm a big BYU fan, but I'm not the guy that names his kid Jimmer. I did not mean to be that guy, but yeah, I ended up naming my kid Taysom.
You couldn't help it.
Well, no, we were having a hard time deciding on a name, and so I thought, well, I'll just go down the roster list, and my wife doesn't know these people, and so I said Taysom, and she's like, oh, I love it, and I'm like, no, I'm going to be the guy who names his kid after a BYU player, and well, I'm that guy. And I did meet Taysom Hill, and I told him the whole story, and he appreciated it and thought it was a little weird, but...
Did you use that as the end to get him on your show?
I did not ask him. I don't know, I was too afraid. But if anybody knows Taysom, I'd love to have him on the show. So,
okay, or on our show for that matter. I mean,
yeah,
show
we'll do
he wants
a,
to be on.
A double show.
Yeah, Tiffany, if you want to talk about the names of your kids, you're welcome to. Otherwise, you don't have to. It's
sort
really
of the
up
theme.
To.
Well, you know, I think I've got more kids than all of you combined because I have six kids. So I have my oldest Scott is 23, and he's married. And then I have an 18-year-old son, Isaac, a 16-year-old daughter, Shelby, 15-year-old daughter, Lauren, 12-year-old Mark, and 9-year-old Kate. So I have decidedly very normal, easy to pronounce, easy to spell children's
names. Good for
you.
That's probably for the best. I have a hard time doing that.
Oh. Well, and in the interest of full disclosure, I did not birth all six
you
of them.
You stole them?
So my husband... I stole
she's
them.
She's a lawyer.
That's
she
right.
wrote up the paperwork. She's good.
That's right. My husband and I have a blended family.
All right.
And so the older three are his. The younger three are mine. We have had a blended family for about 5.5 years now. But we both have full custody of our kids. So everybody lives at our house. And so we live as one big
that's,
happy
that's
family.
That's straight up Brady Bunch, man. Straight up.
It really is. We call ourselves the Brady Bunch because we have three boys,
that's
three
amazing.
Girls.
Now, Jeff, now you have your opening song for this episode.
Can't do it. It's not fair use.
There you
don't
go.
Have rights.
Oh,
that's
good,
about
good
that.
Point. No, Tiffany can help you out. She'll write something up.
Okay. Yeah, I can.
That's right. We call our We call ourselves the Tanner Vincent Bunch. And my sister did, she's a designer, did design us a logo that looks like the Brady Bunch and with all our pictures in it. So it's kind
of
cute.
All right. She can design one of the four of us for this show. That's what I'm excited to do.
Okay.
So let's navigate to a little bit of news. We'll pepper in some other things. Let's just see how we're doing. You know, there's a lot of stuff happening this week. Yeah. Well, yes and no. I mean, there are things happening.
It's pretty typical, Jeff. I mean, nothing outrageous that is dominating social media. But
yeah. Well, we don't have like massive excommunications or random other things that we sometimes talk about. So, but there's still some good stuff this week.
Was that boy who fell into the gorilla cage? Was he Mormon?
I'm gonna say he was.
Yeah, let's talk about that.
And
for
his
a while.
Parents are
what,
going
yeah, what
to
are his parents?
Lose.
Maybe
their
the gorilla was Mormon.
Poor gorilla.
May he rest in peace.
I have mixed feelings about the gorilla thing. I see all sides to the argument, but I feel like the gorilla
he had work
was,
to do on the other side, Jeff.
The gorilla was just being a gorilla.
Yeah.
And gravity was just being gravity, and what are you going
like,
to do?
It's like, why is your kitten there? Come on. Like, what are you doing, people? I don't know. My, who knows? We lose children all the time, right? It happens. So, anyway, this is not strictly Mormon, but whenever it involves Orrin Hatch... I love to make mention on the show, the pride of Utah. What is he on, Ways and Means?
No. Jeff, as one of the Utahns on the call, and very conservative Republican, may I add, Hatch is not the darling of Utah anymore, okay? Early on, people loved him here, and maybe he'll run again at 110 years old, but there's no way this guy's going to get more than double-digit votes.
Dude, the man is going to do the Strom Thurmond thing, all right? When he dies, there will be a statue of him at the State House in Utah. The Confederate flag will fly behind him, and everything is going to be okay. Orrin is a dear, wonderful human being, but
three heartbeats from the presidency? Right?
Is he pro tempore?
I'm pretty sure he is.
I don't know.
Anyways.
So, what do I know? I live in D.C. I don't know any of these things. I don't know what they're doing. I live in Virginia, okay? I don't live in D.C. itself. It's different over here across the Potomac. It's a very different setup, different way of life. And the rest of Virginia hates us, by the way. That's half the fun of living in the D.C.
The rest of the country hates you, Jeff.
That's probably true, too. So, anyway, this is supposed to be just basically a mention, but Orrin Hatch was going to meet with Merrick Garland, the Supreme Court nominee, right? Now, we might all have different feelings on all of that mess, whether they should confirm or not. But the Deseret News, in all of its brilliance, published Senator Hatch's thoughts on the meeting with Merrick Garland the day before the meeting actually happened. So our good friend Orrin had already said, you know, I met with him. I don't really think this worked out. Basically said, kind of stay the course. My opinion is the same. We're not going to vote on the guy. We're not going to do this. And they published it all as an op-ed the day before. So I just want to do a slow clap for Deseret News and for Orrin Hatch. Just for everybody involved in this fiasco. Very, very well done. Very proud of the work you're doing, the fine journalism you're doing at Deseret News. Really crushing it.
It's kind of like sausage. We all know that that's how it works.
Yeah.
But, you know, when you actually see it made, you go, ew.
I don't know. When I see sausage made, I say, I like cured meat, and I want some more. And I'm into what's happening right now. I once dated a girl whose dad had sausage-making parties. And he would sit there with all his guy friends, like golf buddies. And there was sausage just strewn all about the kitchen area.
I'm really glad that you have a personal anecdote about sausage making. That's not something everyone has in their back pocket.
Yeah, I've got it all. I've got you name a topic, I will strive my best to find a personal anecdote about it. I don't have them for everything.
It's impressive.
Think. If you ever want to talk about the show Big Brother, I've got nothing. Nothing in my belt at all. Anyway, so good job Garland and Hatch, and just well played. And they wonder why they need to rescue the Trib just for the sake of
right?
The Trib's dying along with all the other newspapers.
Well,
Jeff,
though, speaking of, you saw, though, that, of course, one of the huntsmen bought the Trib, and he actually wrote a little letter this week because the sale was finalized, just kind of stressing his desire to own it, that he doesn't care about the money.
Things that people do with daddy's money. This is interesting.
It's his family's money. But
I'm sure it is.
Okay, Kurt, but no, what's your opinion on this there, buddy? You clearly
is good.
You're angry about this.
No, I'm not angry about this at all. I've seen, I follow my... My good buddy, Pat Bagley, who's the editorial cartoonist at the Trib, who's a genius and incredible artist. I usually disagree with every one of his cartoons, but nonetheless, he's very excited about this. So I'm glad that he's excited and that he's got a boss that's a Mormon that he can still be okay with. So other than that, I really don't care. I mean, I feel like the Trib's just going the way of most newspapers, and that's that. So that's it.
Cool story, bro.
He is a former bishop. I got to get him on my podcast.
Yeah, his brother, another Huntsman, is the president. No, was the president of the mission out here. There are many Huntsmans serving in different capacities.
Interesting. And the other brother may not go to church very much.
I'm pretty sure old John is not going to church. Yeah,
that's
not
all right. We love him, though, and we hope he comes back.
We sure do.
To some degree.
That way I can keep watching Abby Huntsman videos when she talks about temple garments that she's never worn. It's very important. Yeah.
She may not come back, but we'll still love her.
I'm sorry. I mean, I appreciate it, but when Romney was running 4 years ago, I'm like, wait a minute. Abby Huntsman's going to be the one to guide us on this journey of understanding Mormon sacred textiles. I don't know.
I have to say, I saw that. I think it was a Dateline like that ran it, and I kind of laughed for that very reason. I'm like, you haven't even been through the temple. What qualifies you as an expert?
Nothing. That's your answer. To
nothing.
You. Boom. That was a lawyer moment for you, right there.
That's right.
All right.
Can we talk about something I'm super excited to talk about?
Yeah, Irene, let's do it.
Shia LaBeouf has entered the Mormon universe because BYU students picked him up.
Are we excited about that? Okay. What's this mean?
What's happening?
Did they take him to church?
Are you confused by what I'm saying to you?
Okay, well, first of all, of course, you're insinuating that we should be excited about Shia LaBeouf.
Oh, okay. Well, here's why I'm excited. Because
sort of the kiss of death guy.
I didn't actually read this article like in depth until like a few minutes ago, but I saw the headline and I laughed. I didn't realize it was like this thing he's purposefully doing. He's like sending out his coordinates so that like people can pick him up wherever he is.
This is his job now.
Which leads me to the question, who is like this up to date on Shia LaBeouf? Who is getting tweet notifications from Shia LaBeouf that they're like, yeah, I'm going to do that? And the answer is kids at BYU.
That's right.
So
I'd go find him. I wonder what he's doing right now. Shia, where are you today?
Apparently,
keep talking about this because I'm
apparently
gonna take a while.
It's called Project Take Me Anywhere. So he's like turned into this like performance artist, which I guess that's what you can do once you've made a few movies.
Okay, his mother's probably so disappointed.
Take Me Anywhere. He tweeted Take Me Anywhere yesterday. I'm assuming he's been picked up since then. His coordinates were in the sticks of Arizona, somewhere down by where is this, like Sholo? Springerville.
So I guess my question is when after you pick him up, what do you do with him?
That's a good question. You just go.
No, yeah,
drive where he wants, or
do you pick him up and drop him off at a new location so he can tweet that location, or what do you do with him once you pick him up?
I'm pretty sure Michael Bay asked the same questions during the Transformer movies. Like, what do you do with this kid? The makers of Even Stevens were like, I don't know what to do now. Have him start the movie.
I'm pretty sure at the end of this, he's going to have a solid 2020 presidential campaign in front of him. So this is what we do now in this country.
True. I want to find Shia.
I mean, I read about it on social media, so he's getting traction, you know?
Did you see the other social media-esque thing of the week, the emoji Bible that is now a reality?
I saw you link to that. I didn't take a look at it.
Okay, I kind of like it, though.
Okay.
Let's see.
It's the entire Bible, I assume, in emoji language.
Wow.
Emojis.
All right, who's jumping on the Book of Mormon?
Oh, yeah.
Who's going to do this?
That's genius. So it's...
I don't even speak emoji, so this means very little to me.
So it's an app, though. And,
oh, is it? Okay.
Right? So, and it says it totals under 3,300 pages. It's the book subtitled Scripture for Millennials. And it's in the iTunes store. so you can buy it. Mm. And it's got the Bible in emojis. Is it going to do as well as Kim Kardashian emojis? I don't know.
Probably not. And I don't think it'll displace Chick-fil-A. Chick-fil-A is number one on the App Store right now because they're giving away free sandwiches. So I don't know if that's going to happen.
I don't know. I think my teenagers might not balk at scripture study if they got to read it in emojis. That might be a good thing.
Now, Jeff, you do want to buy some
for this. I don't know what to do with this. In the beginning, Halo Smiley Person created the logo made in paint, end of the world. Glory to Luke 2:14. Glory to Halo Person in the highest. And on. I don't know what how. Is
and
this legible
and
to
on
people?
Earth peace. yeah,
emojis
I like
the future.
It. I think it's cool. This is
they're making an emoji movie next year. So this is the future, guys.
What?
Emoji movie is happening next year.
I think that's the Angry Birds movie. What's the emoji movie?
It's next year. Go IMDb. This is happening. The emoji movie. Okay. So this is just one of many things that are going the way of emoji.
August 2017 from Sony. Okay, mm-hmm. Sony's not having the best year.
Yeah. They're going to have an incredible 2017, Jeff.
They might. Disney. Okay, well, I'm not seeing a lot more about this, but so it's just going to be a movie. It's going to be like WALL-E, no actual talking, just emojis instead.
I'm not sure. I'm sure they'll have a plot behind it, but anyways, maybe they'll work the emoji Bible into that.
I'm very afraid of this right now. I don't know how I feel about it. But if any of you are Apple people, I don't know if this is on Android, but download it. Irene, you can expense this if you want to download the emoji Bible, okay?
Okay.
Boom. $3. $3, and you too can read. Like, how are they going to do Isaiah 1:18, for example?
I guess you have to just buy it and find out.
Sins are scarlet. They be white as snow. I want to see what the emoji is for sin. What do they do?
Just like
that
one with like the X's on his eyes, you know?
That's
like
sin?
An open mouth and X. Yeah, because
death.
I mean, spiritual death. See, Kurt gets it.
What about Song of Solomon? I mean, what the heck are they going to do with that one?
No, I mean, I think there's actually pretty good material in Song of Solomon for emojis.
Well, that's
let's be honest.
That's actually a fair point.
They're going to do that in all GIFs.
I believe they're called GIFs, no?
GIFs, whatever.
I say GIF, though, in my mind. So
everybody says GIF
it.
Unless you're somewhat technical. GIF. I realize.
I say GIF. I thought it was officially GIF. I thought the guy who made GIF said it was GIF.
So, Jeff, I've got some good news.
I might be wrong though. Yeah,
I've got some good news. The missing Mormon missionary was found.
Okay, there was one. The one in Ogden.
In Ogden. This article on Desert News is obviously they're quite vague. But I just think back to like that moment when the mission president thought, okay, we need to notify everybody. We have got to find her. I mean, this could be, I can't imagine what he was going through lose a missionary.
Well, he was freaking out
because
she might have strayed to Roy. And they're just like.
Not people. Roy.
So,
that's the other side of the tracks.
And talk about this. So this is a sister missionary in Ogden who disappeared, and then she was found. How long after was she found?
I think it was about a day later.
And like
2 days, like 2 days later. Yeah, day and a half, almost 2 days later.
Okay, yeah. And then
detectives
how did we find
her?
How did people find her? Who found her? Detectives found her.
Well, from
they do from, not really.
Did they not
that.
Talk about it?
No. It says right here. Okay. So we've got Ogden Police Lieutenant Tim Scott said detectives used Kang's contacts and photos on her iPad to track people she knew, which led them to the area where she was found.
So she's. Do you get this sense? I mean, this was a runaway type of situation, right? I mean,
I guess
this person too much tracting and snapped like your companion.
Well, from what I read, was about 9:30, 10 o'clock at night that she just left the apartment, and she was quite apparently emotionally distraught when she left her apartment. I think it was like on Monday evening.
I've been there several
times. My guess would be probably a little difficulty with the companion.
Yeah, tough planning session at 9:30.
What's up with sister missionaries causing drama all the time, right, Irene?
Yeah.
I mean,
what's up with that?
What do you think about that?
Stop perpetuating this like terrible stereotype of missionaries. Seriously, though, here's what I have to say about sister missionaries. I really did not ever want to go on a mission because of all these things that people are saying about sister missionaries. And I met one cool missionary. Her name is Elaine, and she was my best friend in college. And she like made me realize that not all sister missionaries are crazy and insane. And guess what? It helped me go on a mission, and I'm glad I went. And I was glad to know that not everyone was crazy. So I'd love to stop perpetuating that stereotype so that more and like normal, cool people go, sister missionaries go on mission, and that people won't be afraid to do it. Because it can be awesome.
Can we get real for a second?
Uh-oh.
I don't know.
Buckle up, ladies.
No. My realness is actually in firm support of what Irene said. I tease about this, but I've long found sister missionaries to be more effective and delightful than elders who are
I would agree with that.
Who are immature children and don't know what they're doing half the time. I remember when I went on my mission, my uncle said, all right, sister missionaries, you're either going to like love them or hate them. There's no middle ground. Either they're great or they're lunatics. And I said, okay, well, that's kind of... We're kind of dealing with sweeping generalizations there, but I'll give it a go.
And I wonder if that stigma has changed since the age change. Are they still these mature, put together young adults?
They're a year closer to being, you know, peers with the elders now than they were before. So maybe
Now they're all on 19. So now maybe they're
want to say we had some sister missionaries in our ward for about a year, and they came in and they just cleaned up a whole bunch of messes that the elders had left, and they were awesome and amazing and probably went through about 5 or 6 girls, and not a one of them had any issues. They were go-getters. They were awesome.
Nice.
Yeah, I usually think they're pretty good. I would argue one of the biggest things I've seen since, in particular since the age drop for missionaries, for the elders especially, is they need some kind of like finishing school or cotillion or something in the MTC, because these are wonderful young men who have often now have no experience being away from home and don't always know how to talk to people. And it's not their fault necessarily, but I feel like I've seen a spike in that since the age drop, and that they often just, they lack more social graces than they did when they were maybe 19. I mean, it all varies, of course. I've seen all kinds of different situations. But so often now I see a lot of them who are just kind of like, they don't know how to talk to us as adults in the church.
Yeah, I mean, when I think back on my mission, some of the missionaries, elders and sisters who were older were ones that were really, really good, because just what you're saying, like, they can talk to, they're more like, exposed to social situations where they can talk to other adults, and that like helps a ton, I think. I was saying, I don't think it's like just because they drop the age we should all be in a huge rush to go on a mission. You know, I think it's like super valuable to like live on your own for a little bit and like figure out who you are a little bit before you go.
I think we could even take it a step further and make it like the old days. We all get married, we have our families, blah, 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 and then they just send the men away for like 2 years to go hang out in Slovakia.
That would be awesome.
You've already got the dating out of the way.
Can you imagine? I would be so mad.
They just call you up and they're like, hey, Hubs.
This is actually my recurring nightmare.
Ship out.
I'm glad I went on a mission, but it is my recurring nightmare that I get called again on a mission.
I've had that too.
And I had a nightmare that my husband Brandon also got called on another mission, and I was even more mad about that. So, you know, it's just, I don't know.
It's funny because it's somewhere between a nightmare and like, okay, well, I enjoyed this part of my life.
I've
had dreams about
100%
that too,
or... terror.
I remember when I had a dream like that once, and I got called to the same mission, like to just go back and do the same mission. And I remember feeling really frustrated in my dream, because I'm like in the MTC and I'm like, dude, I know the language already. Like, I don't need this. Why are you wasting my time? And I was so frustrated in my dream. I just wanted to go to the field and get moving. I already knew it all. It's just, Kurt, you've had that too? No?
Oh, yeah. This is a...
Universal.
You could create a whole podcast about people that have this dream, and we just as a therapy, because it is pretty recurring for all, I think.
I think that should be the new TWIM spinoff. We really got to get some critical mass, though, of people who send in stories if we make that work.
Send them in, folks. This is a call for your mission dream stories.
Comment.
Yeah, because
on
it's
this.
Always so entertaining to hear other people's dreams.
Totally is. Everyone loves hearing people's dreams.
Yeah, that'd be a.
Might get canceled. I'll put a pilot together.
I dream that a giant snake is eating me. There's some sort of, you know, there's something Freudian there, I'm sure. But I don't know what it is. Let's pivot for a second. So, ladies, you've been kind enough to join us this week because you are both professionals, you know?
Yes. Very professional.
Yeah.
Yes.
I spend my day with seven-year-olds, but I guess we can call
it. I'm
that
neither a lady nor professional, Jeff, so I'll
Kurt,
just step back.
Kurt, you're an entrepreneur, buddy. That's the most professional it gets. Straight up. I am not an entrepreneur. I make my money from the federal government and proud. So thank you, Uncle Sam, for all you do. But we wanted to have some people on this week to talk a little bit about. This is something we talked about weeks ago on this show, right? We did a segment. I think it was it a Daily Universe article that stoked this? I don't quite recall now. It's been at least about a month. That talked about sort of a guy who dumped a woman because she like didn't understand.
That's right.
She didn't understand who she was. And we had an interesting back and forth a bit. Me, Al and I had that. We weren't quite sure how he felt. I understood the argument because this guy's saying like, well, yeah, do what you want. But at the end of the day, I want you to, you know, like the Family Proclamation says, want to be a mother and a nurturer and let that be the priority for helping raise our family. You're not into that. Like you want to go to grad school and do whatever. And, okay, first of all, of course, to each their own, they clearly weren't a match in the first place because that would never work out if those people don't see eye to eye on that. But it made us think, and we put out a call to our listeners and said, hey, are you a working mom? Are you someone in the church who's sort of navigated these waters and has opinions on it and still, of course, remains active and you believe in the Family Proclamation, you believe in all these things, and yet you want to pursue a career, especially that's the key a verb there. You want to pursue a career. I think we could have a very different discussion on working out of necessity. And if that is at play here right now, then by all means, you know, cut me off and we can talk about that too. So I just kind of wanted to open this up for discussion for our two working professional women. How is that for you as Latter-day Saint women, especially, you know, Irene, you're in Utah, Tiffany, you're in Idaho. I mean, there are typical, probably conservative, traditional, quote unquote, Mormon circles, I would say. Do you run into too much with that? Do you find it to be weird? Do you ever feel like you don't fit in any sense?
I'll take this. So, sorry, Tiffany. You can obviously continue. I actually asked I grew up in a family where both of my parents also worked full time. And my mom was a dietitian. And she also worked because she wanted to work. She wasn't doing it out of necessity, but she wanted to work. So I grew up in a home where that was like the norm and it was very like, okay, you know, and they are also very stalwart members of the church. And so I, you know, like a couple of years ago when a lot of, different issues were in the news about the women's role in the church and in the home and stuff. I asked my parents, like, cause my mom never ever like resented the church for any type of culture that was being, you know, like of like women staying at home or whatever.
Yeah.
And she always was very okay with what she was doing. And so I asked her, like, was that ever hard? And okay, I should have looked up the scripture before I came on, but my dad's like there's a scripture where it says, you know, Eve worked alongside Adam. And he's like, and that's how we've always thought about it. And like, I think it is very personal, like, but for them, and this is the same for me too, is like, it is very personal and it is like, something that I enjoy doing. And also just like, it makes me, for me personally, it makes me a better mom when I'm working. I don't know if that makes sense because I'm homeless, but it helps me. It helps me be a better balanced person, which helps me be a better mom.
Okay.
So I don't know if Tiffany has similar. Yeah.
Well, I've probably been doing the working mom with kids thing a little longer than Irene. I grew up in a family different from Irene's. My mom was a stay-at-home mom, and my dad had owned a furniture business and worked 6 days a week and was gone a lot. And I do remember at one point in time when I was in high school having a discussion with my mother, and my mother saying to me, oh, you know, it's just really super important, you know, that you stay home with your kids and that you be there for them. And but I kind of chose a different path. When I graduated from high school and my friends knew I was going to BYU, everybody said, oh, you're going to BYU to get married. And I said, no, I'm going to BYU to get an education. And that's what I did. I went to BYU and I got an education. And I graduated from BYU, both undergrad and law school, and I was still single and went and started my career and really enjoyed what I did. And then I got married a little later in my 20s, and it wasn't until in my 30s that I had my first child. And it's kind of interesting because, you know, my husband at that time knew, you know, obviously that I was a lawyer and that I was very career driven when we got married, and we'd had a discussion about my staying home and being with our child. And that lasted after the baby was born about 6 weeks, because I was going crazy. I drove him nuts. I was driving everybody nuts. And it was just kind of one of those things where it was like, wow, you really probably need to go back to work so that our marriage will survive. And and I did, you know, but I went back to work on a part-time basis so that I could, you know, balance having this young baby with having this job that I really enjoyed. And while my kids were very small and before they got into school, I have been fortunate enough to have various jobs, some of which where I've only had to be in the office a couple days a week, where I've been able to have that balance between being a mom and having a career. And, you know, I've really appreciated the flexibility of employers. You know, I've felt some backlash from other women, certainly. The ward that I'm in right now, fortunately, there are a lot of working moms. And so because there are a lot of working moms, there's really no judgment or backlash or anything like that. But there was a period of time that I was in a ward in Utah, and dare I say, a Utah County ward. And I know, my husband and I had just moved into the ward. And I was standing at some sort of a Relief Society event talking with a sister, and there was another young mother who had just moved into the ward as well. And so the sister is asking me, and you know, about what I do, and you know, I explain that I, you know, have this job and that I work, and then she turns to the other sister and says, oh, what do you do? And she's like, oh, I've got these three kids. I'm a stay-at-home mom. And this lady just starts gushing over her. Oh, that's so nice. It's so nice you get to stay home with your kids. And I thought, wow, that was just kind of a slap in the face to my decision to have a job. And I didn't feel badly about it at all, because I feel like it's a choice. And I feel like at the end of the day, I'm accountable to my Heavenly Father for the choices that I make and how I raise my kids. And if I can feel like I can face my Heavenly Father and feel like I have done my duty as a parent and fulfilled my obligation as a parent, then I'm happy with my choice, regardless of what anybody else feels about it, because ultimately it does come down to my relationship with my Heavenly Father.
Okay. Kurt, do you have a follow-up question?
You know, I don't. I mean, I know it's a tough stigma in the church a little bit. Yeah, I'm like, oh, is it my turn?
I'm keeping you on your toes, Kurt. Come on, man.
Yes. I'm just the opposite. I'm a man who doesn't work, so this is good. But no, it's a tough stigma that I think that we, like you mentioned, that person in Utah County that kind of gushed over that sister, and is like, she probably didn't even realize she did that, but it's sort of this culture that we sort of inbred into ourselves, right, to some degree, and we didn't mean to, but now we sort of live in a culture that, I don't know, it's a different world now, I guess.
I think that's just like the most unfortunate thing is like a lot, I mean, is like the cult, a lot of the culture makes it seem like, education, it, like, you know, your top priority as a young woman or whatever is to, like, get married and raise kids, which is a very important calling in life. But it, like, I mean, it can also overshadow some things that are also important. Like, a lot of girls, I think, like, grow up in that type of environment or culture, whatever, and they don't, like, really value an education, or they don't value, you know, doing other things. And then they get to an age where they're like, oh, I should have gone to school, or, and they kind of resent that, that opportunity wasn't more available to them, you know? And I think that that's really unfortunate. I know people, you know, that are around my age or whatever, that are like, just resentful of stuff like that. And that's just, it's just sad, I think.
And I agree with Irene. I have met a lot of women who have gotten married very young and then subsequently gone, wow, you know, I'd really like to go back to school. I want to get an education. Maybe I wish I had made some different choices earlier on. And another thing I think is really interesting is sometimes, and again, I think this is a culture thing, we take the, members seem to take the proclamation on the family to say, men work, women stay at home. And that's not really what the proclamation on the family says. It says, you know, that men are to be the primary breadwinners and women are to be the primary nurturers, but the couple is to work together in deciding what is harmonious for their family. And I think that that is really a key thing is yes, we have kind of this general umbrella of what our different roles are, but sometimes we forget the individual choice part of that and how we work together. And that sometimes gets forgotten in the culture.
Yeah,
I would think so. Oh, go ahead, Irene.
Well, I was going to say, I think, like, a lot of it is, like, personality and personal choices and being, you know, being accountable for your own choices and stuff. And so, I'm not one to say that, like, if you're getting married young and you're not going to college, like, that's not a bad choice. Like, if that's what is good for you, then that is great, you know? But I do think that some people, that opportunity is not even, like, an option because it's not presented to them as, yeah, like, as like a priority, you know? So I just wanted to clarify that too.
And there's a good point. You mentioned the family proclamation. So let's read that little excerpt there that I think we kind of alluded to. You know, when we talk about men working, women with kids, right? Tiffany, you can bring your lawyer eyes to this probably if you want. But, you know, so it says, by divine design, fathers are to preside over their families in love and righteousness and are responsible to provide the necessities of life and protection for their families. Mothers are primarily responsible for the nurture of their children. In these sacred responsibilities, fathers and mothers are obligated to help one another as equal partners. And then, of course, disability, death, or other circumstances may necessitate individual adaptation. Individual adaptation, I think, is crucial in the church, where oftentimes we forget that everyone does have different circumstances, whatever they may be, and that we adapt accordingly. And I think you'd be hard-pressed to find statements from church leaders that would suggest that, you know, your situation be darned, you know, get in line and work with the, you know, the ideal we've presented here. So I had a thought, but I almost lost it.
I just want to say,
it's good. Tiffany's got thoughts.
You know, one of the real motivations for me in wanting to get an education, and I think sometimes this isn't conveyed to our young women as strongly as I would like it to see conveyed to our young women, is, you know, I didn't know when I was getting my education. I wasn't until I was a junior in college that I even decided to go to law school. And I certainly had no idea what my career path would be and how it ultimately ended up. But I knew that I wanted an education because I knew that I wanted that just in case something ever happened to my husband. I wanted to be able to have the ability to go out and earn a living and be able to support myself and support my kids. And so that was a real motivating factor to me in making a decision to get an education, was being able to take care of myself. And I would like to see, you know, more of an emphasis with the young women on education and why it's good for them to get an education and have some experience, regardless of whether or not they ever use it in their life. I don't think anybody ever regrets getting an education.
Well, yeah, that's the thing, is I don't think there should be an emphasis on, like, in case something happens to your husband. I think it should be because we value knowledge, right? Like, okay, I always say this, and it's really silly, but I was in the High School Musical, Schoolhouse Rock, of course. And, you know, Schoolhouse Rock's thing is, like, knowledge is power. And that's, like, totally what, that's, like, a doctrine of our gospel, right? Like, knowledge is power, and, like, intelligence stays with us forever. And so I think, like, education, whether it be, like, the traditional route of college or another form of other forms of education are super
trade
important.
School, yeah, plumber, electrician.
Seriously, sometimes sure. I just want to go back to college and get like a million bachelor degrees. But
well,
then
Jeff, I was thinking, you know, I think we all know where this cultural feeling comes from. Obviously, that we've received direct encouragement towards, you know, marriage. Obviously there's ordinances involved, but we do live in a church where we, from the age of, you know, really eight, we start a series of hoops that we jump through, right? We get baptized and we go into the youth program, you know, men receive the priesthood, and then we get to a point in life where, okay, you boys go on missions and you girls, well, your next step is marriage, so don't wait too long on that, because that's a really good thing, right? And sometimes it's important, I think, for parents to just step back with their child and just say, you know, what is it? Imagine all these things weren't here. What do you really want to see your life become? You know, what passions and desires do you have? And I'm not saying we dismiss, you know, the ordinances and sealing and marriage and things like that, but giving the child a moment to just think of saying, wow, you know what? I don't have to be just like everybody else's mold. You know, I can maybe ponder over this, and maybe marriage is my thing, or, you know, I'm kind of interested in law, and maybe I'll go that direction. And as long as we encourage our children to go those directions while maintaining the priority of eternal ordinances, you know, I think that's a safe route to go. But we do kind of trap ourselves in these series of hoops that we jump through.
Yeah, but at the same time, kind of what you said, though, Kurt, it's like, you know, there's also nothing wrong with, I think, treating the sacredness, and in some cases you could say the urgency perhaps of entering into these divine covenants, of following these paths and wanting
right.
to do things. But that doesn't mean it always has to be at the expense of, especially for women, of having interests and obtaining an education and caring about other things. Sometimes I think we treat them like they're mutually exclusive, that the call to motherhood, where it says primarily responsible for the nurture of their children, that somehow means, and that's sort of the end of your life outside of that, that you should not have pursuits and things you care about beyond that, which is certainly not the case. I mean, look at the lives of countless notable women in the church. It's not like they were primarily known just for their ability to be mothers, which, and from what I've seen, being a father and everything, I mean, being a mother is the most awesome thing I've been able to watch my wife do. It really is. And she has countless talents and does innumerable great things. But I love seeing that. You love seeing that mantle descend upon your wife and the power that's there. And that's awesome. But, of course, we can be known for other things as well. I think sometimes, culturally now in the church, though, sometimes we also demur for X, Y, and Z. We see a lot of men now who are very lazy to want to get their stuff together and actually kind of get married and advance in their lives. I've seen a lot of counsel in recent years where the brethren seem to bother to mention travel as a reason, as not a justifiable reason to delay having children, which I think is very interesting. There are all these milestones we kind of talk about in the church, and we have to figure out what works best for each and every one of us. We're all in different places. But I think it is still important to remember that, yeah, you know, we can have faith, though, and want to do the right things. Like, yeah, now I have kids, so, like, I don't go do stuff like I used to go do. We were kind of laughing about that before we started recording. And that's part of life. Like, it's okay. I can't just spend my whole life just gallivanting around the world and doing whatever I want to do, because I think a big part of our spiritual growth is getting outside of that and also doing, you know, what is needed to do for other people, not always worrying about doing what I want to do, which doesn't detract from, you know, any of the great stuff men or women are doing professionally, personally, what have you.
Yeah.
Irene. Amen, yes. Brother.
We all agree. Should we just end
here?
Just
kidding. We're
all on the same
page.
I think, what Kurt was talking about, like, fitting in a mold, I think that's something I've always, like, I don't know if struggle is too strong of a word, but I think about that a lot, like, as a member of the church, because there are these, like, I thought about this a lot as a missionary. Like, there are these missionaries that are like, oh, he's, like, the best missionary, and you're like, I don't want to be like that guy. Like, that guy's the worst, you know? Like, and there are these molds.
He's a total tool.
Here we go again. Sister missionaries, our brother.
There are these molds that you feel like you have to fit in, though, sometimes as members of the church. Like, oh, a woman in the church is supposed to be X, Y, and Z. We're really, like, Heavenly Father, like, wants you to develop your own, you know, like, he has created you as your own person. And, yeah. like, and so I think that's, like, something that's easy to forget in the church, because we talk about these ideals and we talk about, like, you know, we have, like, goals of, like, being the, like, a perfected saint and whatever. And it's, like, I don't know. So it's, I just think, you know, you have to take into account, you know, we can't fit in a mold and we're not supposed to, and that's okay. And that, and amen, I guess.
Sweet. You know, and on that thought of molds, like I mentioned, like there's just a lot of molds in the church that we seem to all try and fit into, like, you know, the mold of how you bear your testimony, right? We have a general sense of when you stand up, how you're supposed to do it, when that's really not always the case. You know, people can bear testimony differently, and that's the way it is. So,
right, yeah. And when you see somebody step outside of that mold and, like, really, like, kill it, you know, like, doing something right. way different, you're like, yeah, why aren't we
and,
doing
and
that?
I always like, you know, to see people who kind of challenge the mold just to help others kind of think differently and maybe see things differently, so that it's all not like, oh, well, this is how it's supposed to be. Well, maybe we can have it be another way, and that's still all right, too.
Yeah. Yeah, the gospel, unfortunately, doesn't fit into a perfect box for everybody, right, that we can just copy over and over again. So I have officially taken over this podcast. We lost Jeff. His computer crashed, and the world may not even hear this episode if he can't recover his audio. I even had the thought of, and now I know it was an inspiration that I ignored, but I thought, you know, I better just record the Skype call as a backup for Jeff, but I didn't, and here we are, nonetheless.
All right, well,
so, that spirit, dude.
I was going to say, if we have to do it so over other, again, we'll do it over again.
What other, right? So, I don't know, have we've hit quite a few articles here, and we're about at the hour mark. I guess we'll wrap it up for Jeff. Are you ladies okay with that?
Yeah, I'm cool.
Yeah.
Cool. All right, Twim Nation, well, I thank you for allowing me to sabotage Jeff's computer and taking over. And as always, we love Jeff and Al, and hopefully Al will be back soon. And we encourage everybody to go to Twim in the world, Twim, thisweekinmormons.com. Go follow him on Facebook, Twitter. Are they on Snapchat yet? I mean,
I don't know, but I think they have an Instagram, you know. They're on stuff. Listen to it on iTunes,
on stuff. Go follow
Stitcher,
them.
You know?
And do you two want to plug anything? I mean, if you need law help, call Tiffany in Idaho, right?
I'll tell you what I'll plug. I've got a really, I have just all sorts of crazy things that happen to me in the courtroom, and, or just, I shouldn't say in the courtroom, just in going to court in general and in dealing with clients. And so I've got kind of a funny Instagram where I just record all of those, and it's called Adventures in Lawyering.
Really?
Yes.
I'm totally checking this out. Yeah. I love Instagram. I'm there.
Okay.
Adventures in Lawyering. It's like, I probably shouldn't promote passenger shaming because it is inappropriate times, but it's pretty funny. They show just horrible passengers on flight. So this is like the lawyer version.
The lawyer version. I, you know, my job sometimes is kind of stressful. And so when the funny, ridiculous things happen, I just kind of have to record those on my Instagram and share them with all my friends.
Awesome.
And so people know that the world of lawyering is not as glamorous as television makes it out to be.
Nice. All right, Irene, what are you going to plug?
I'm going to plug summer. Summer vacation is 2 days away. Let's all have a good time.
Right. This is the reason you're a teacher.
Yeah. Golden handcuffs. Can never quit.
Cool. And of course, I will plug Leading LDS. I encourage everybody to go over to Leading LDS. Even if you don't want to go to Leading LDS, just email your bishop or Relief Society president and say, hey, go to look at Leading LDS. He's doing some good stuff. And maybe I'll interview them in the future and they can tell me all their secrets to their leadership. So with that, we will sign off This Week in Mormons. Tune in every week, guys. Just be lucky. You don't have to hear me every week. All right. Until next time.
Thank you, ladies. Bye.
Yeah. So thanks for hanging, everybody. I've come back after the fact so that you can hear my beautiful voice thanking you for hanging in there while we had some technical difficulties in that my computer crashed totally, completely. Blue screen of death scenario. Whole deal. Recovered what I could. Here we are now. It's worked out decently okay. Thanks for hanging with us. Really would like to give special thanks to Kurt Frankum, who is a good co-host and also pretty much salvaged this thing and saved it and carried the torch a little bit, and Irene Stone and Tiffany Hales for stopping with us to talk about issues for women in the church, working, et cetera, et cetera. There's probably a lot more we could have talked about, potentially dumped the news altogether for all we knew, but we had good stuff, and there'll be good more stuff next week as well. So anyways, everybody, thanks for being with us this week on This Week in Mormons. I certainly appreciate it. It's late at night. I've spent hours trying to reassemble this disaster. This isn't as bad as the Nyland McBain episode. That was crazy. That took me like 2 days to fix. But anyway, thanks for being here. I want you all to know I love you a lot. And I appreciate you taking the time to tune in. It means a lot. And look forward to joining you next week, wherein Al will still not be here. I believe he will be in a Turkish bath in Budapest by that point. And I will still be here in Virginia in the humidity with a child who is sick. But until then, may the Lord bless all of you. And I'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.